What we're dealing with here, littering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoke in the reef.
Called the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah.
No, it's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one solid weekend of training to get that bag.
Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome back to the show. And if you've never been here before, welcome. We're glad you're here. This is an interview episode with none other than Mark Cameron. Mark is a former U.S. Marshal and New York Times plus USA Today best-selling author. Now, Mark spent over three decades in law enforcement serving as a uniformed police officer and detective before accepting a position with the United States Marshals Service. He is also the award-winning author of the Arliss Cutter and Jericho Quinn series, as well as the Tom Clancy Jack Ryan Sr. books, starting with Power and Empire in 2017. His assignments have taken him from rural Alaska to Manhattan, from Canada to Mexico, and all over in between. This guy has done all kinds of crazy stuff, super interesting conversation, and some great nuggets of wisdom in there as well. So you will want to stay tuned for this interview. Before we get to that, I must remind you that we do have a subscription over at Patreon. If you want more Police Academy podcast, more of what we do, you can get it over at Patreon, patreon.com. You get a full list of different things, depending on which membership level you get. And one of those things is a shout out. If you sign up for our top tier, you not only get the Tumblr 2.0, hashtag America Tumblr, but you also get a shout out. And I am way behind on shout outs, so I'm going to get those done today. If I could pull them up, where did they go? I have them right here. Okay. Reminders quit unexpectedly. Yes, thank you. I noticed that. All right. So first, Sal from Waco, Texas. Thank you. Long overdue. Thanks for joining. You should have your Tumblr maybe already, but if you don't have it yet, you should have it very soon. HD, initials HD. I do not have an address for HD. Very suspicious, this new member here. But if that's you and you didn't want us to know where you live, then fine. Glad you're here. Appreciate your membership. Andrew from Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Jordan, Helper, Utah. Thanks for joining. Appreciate you. Mike from Port Angeles, Washington. Jake, or AKA Tigerfly. Let's see, Port St. Joe, Florida. Thanks for joining and being such an active member on Discord. Jared, Muscle Shoals. Is that? It's got to be Alabama. AL. What's AL? That's embarrassing. It's not Alaska, I don't think, right? It's got to be Alabama. Anyways, continuing, Zachary, also don't have an address for you, but Zach, thanks for joining. Russell from Cambridge, Minnesota. Thanks for joining, Minnesota. Emma from Langhorne, Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining, Emma. Glad to see you here. Been seeing you in several places, email and whatnot in the past. Jeff, Oxnard, California. Sorry if I butchered that one. doing the best I can. I'm an idiot. Tyler from, oh gosh. I don't know if this is a typo, but it looks like Ejamsville, Maryland? That can't be right. Tyler, you're from Maryland somewhere. Glad you're a member. I don't know if that's a typo or what. I haven't looked it up. Timothy from Childersburg, California. Thank you for joining the show. That was the longest shout out little stint we've ever done. But now I'm all caught up so I can check these off my reminders list. Thank you all to all of those that I just read for being one of our fearless members. We appreciate you so much for your support for the show, for caring enough to go jump into that level of membership. It really does mean a lot to us. So thank you so much. Now, again, if you want to be a member, go check it out, patreon.com. You get full-length episodes, early release episodes, community chat access, merch discounts, and if you sign up for that top tier, of course, you get a shout-out and the America Tumblr 2.0. So go check it out, patreon.com. I don't know how long this intro is taking, but I'm in Joe Rogan territory, I'm sure, at this point. So we will carry on and get to the show. I hope you all enjoy it. I know you will. Please welcome this venerable guest, Mark Cameron. Mark, thank you so much for coming on the show, for spending some time with us today. As I mentioned, you know, before we went live, when I heard that you guys were interested in coming on the show, that you were, and that you write for Clancy, or you write Clancy books, I was, it was immediate yes from me. You know, as I said, if I'm going to pick up a fiction book, it's a Clancy book. I grew up reading them. Red Storm Rising is still my favorite fiction book of all time. And not because I like it more than all the other Clancy books, but because I haven't read them all yet. So there might be a better one in there, but that's my favorite so far. So thanks for coming on the show. And first, I usually ask my guests to share some of their career at the beginning of an interview, just so they know, you know, who I've got on here and why. And obviously part of you sharing your career is through your writing. So if you could just share your career path a little bit, but also like, how did your career relate to what you write in your books?
Yeah. So I started, I knew I wanted to be a police officer when I was very young. And I read a little bit in your bio that you wanted to do something to change people's lives. And as a kid, I kind of felt the same way. But I also wanted to write. And so I was writing stories when I was a kid, and my aunt was a librarian. My dad was a teacher. My grandmother's a teacher. I ended up marrying a teacher. I really wanted to write, but I also wanted to be a cop. Mm. So my wife and I got married, went away to school, got pregnant, needed a job. So I went back to my hometown and thought, well, this would be easy to get on with the police department. That can't be too hard there. I wanted to go Fed. I mean, I just always had told my dad, my mom was kind of scared of me going into uniform law enforcement. So I said, no, I'm going to go Fed. So it's not, you know, uniform. And then I went and applied to be a police officer at my hometown in Weatherford, Texas, just west of Fort Worth. Okay. And loved it. I mean, it took me a while to get hired. I mean, like certainly not as easy as I thought it was going to be. I had the kind of that certitude of a 21-year-old, I can do anything, sure, kind of swagger. Got on with them, served as a uniformed police officer for a while, mounted police officer, rode horses, department scuba diver, and then a detective for a number of years. And then eventually, about my 7-year mark, I'd applied with the Marshal Service. I had a chance to work with the marshals when I was a detective. Was really impressed by the kind of job they did. And so applied with them. And this was back in the day when you filled out a notice of intent card and sent it in. And 2 months later, you got a letter back. And and 2 months later, you took a test. And then 5 months later, you got the results of the test and an interview. And eventually, about 2.5 years later, I got hired by the Marshal Service. I'd given up, as a matter of fact, and had gone from detectives back to the mounted patrol, riding horses, thinking, well, this is what I like. And the detective stuff was going to help me get to be a marshal or a deputy. And my wife came screaming up in the car and said, you've been offered a position. And then I spent the next 22, almost 23 years with the United States Marshal Service.
Nice. So compare and contrast those a little bit for us, because we obviously have listeners who are interested in either side. I've had that question a lot, you know, what's the difference, right, between local law enforcement and federal? In your perspective, what are some of the main differences there?
Well, I'd say that generally speaking, the federal government pays better. Not all the time. I mean, my youngest son's an Anchorage police officer, and they make pretty dang good money, yeah, up here. Probably not what they deserve, but they they certainly make decent salary as far as a beginning police officer versus a beginning Fed. And as a matter of fact, I took a pay cut to go on even from a smaller town, I took a pay cut to go on the with the marshals, but it went up fairly significantly quickly. But you know, I always tell people, and I've had many, many, many people over the years, my kids' friends would come over and say, tell me about law enforcement. How do I get on with the marshals? And I tell everybody, go get the red lights and sirens out of your blood, spend some time at a state and local department, have the fun of a, you know, that kind of work, the nightly adrenaline, the nightly helping people and sort of swinging in like Tarzan to save the day or talk down a domestic or whatever, because in the federal system, it's much more plodding. Mm. The excitement is super high when it happens, but it's not as often.
Right.
And you don't get to see the results as often. Now in the Marshal Service, one of the reasons I liked it is because of all the agencies, it was the most boots on the ground that I have friends in the Border Patrol that would say the same thing,
right.
But that's a uniformed agency from the plainclothes federal agent, quote unquote, you know, 1811, which is the criminal investigator category or designation. That's it's the most boots on the ground from my experience, where we, you know, we're constantly going out of bad guys. In fact, the Marshal Service is quite proud of the fact that they arrest more people every year, more felons every year than all the other federal agencies combined, because we spend our time doing it. It's not that the other agencies don't have the expertise. They certainly do. And I don't want to demean any other agency, but we just spend our time doing that.
Right. So what would you say was your favorite part or the favorite season of your career?
You know, looking back, patrol. I enjoy patrol more than anything. And when I think of the things that I learned about human nature and the things that I draw from all the time for my books, it's patrol. I mean, you know, as well as I do, and probably your listeners know as well, that patrol is a patrol officer really is a Jack or Jane of all trades. They have to know a little bit about a lot of nature, and it's, you know, a lot more like the old Adam 12 show than it is like, end of watch or something like that. There's some, certainly some high stress times, but it's a people business, and you get to know people, you get to meet people sometimes on the worst day of their life and try to talk them off the ledge, sometimes literally, sometimes just figuratively. And I'm kind of a loner, and I don't particularly like being out socializing, but as far as a job, I enjoy the people aspect of patrol. Now on the Marshal Service, I enjoyed the travel. I enjoyed the hunt, looking for a bad guy or lady to get them off the street, and the sort of the analytics of it. And I enjoyed protection as well. I enjoyed the dignitary protection side of things, and actually specialized in that mid-career.
Nice. So the grass isn't always greener. That's one takeaway here. If you're sitting in a cruiser.
No, the grass is just other grass.
Yeah. It's just
the grass is just other grass.
I know there are a lot of people pushing cruisers right now that are going, get me out of here. And they may, if you're listening and that's you, you might be right. Like given the climate right now, might not be a bad idea to try to go fed and get out of that uniform. At the same time, if you need that one-on-one interaction and you want to be boots on the ground as much as you can, that's, you're already in that spot. But yeah, that's interesting. I've got a buddy in the ATF, and from what it sounds like, most of his work is sitting behind a desk. You know, they don't get to do a lot of the, the fun stuff, so to speak. So
well, it depends on the particular person and in the locale they're in. We've had ATF agents on our multi-agency task force kicking doors with us, and you know, going after sex offenders that had really no nexus to gun crimes, but then we would help them with other fugitives when it came to warrants on firearms violations. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of your career is what you make of it. And I had this discussion with my sons that, you know, both in law enforcement, and I'm not one to buy into the it's worse than it's ever been kind of thing. When I started in law enforcement, it was pretty crummy, and people in bigger cities, we were having shootings in Dallas, and people hated the police, and the pendulum swung. I mean, we were, I have letters that I got in the early 80s from people, from little kids that, you know, I'm sorry that so-and-so got killed in a city next to ours, not our city. And we were trained in the academy the same time. And again, it's without social media, we probably didn't have the great blocks of people angry at us.
Yeah.
But there was certainly a lot of animosity. In fact, we proudly wore little pig tie tacks on our our ties at work, because that's where everybody called us. So the pendulum swings back and forth, and we're seeing that a little bit now with, you know, people that are angry with the police, and then crime rears its ugly head, and then so police step back in and do their job. And, you know, I would never tell anyone else what to do. I'm not in this position that you guys are, that, you know, that give advice. I can just tell what I do and give advice to my kids. And that advice is, if you need to go get a job somewhere else, go get a job somewhere else. If you got into police work to help people and serve, then bow your head and help people and serve, and it will pass.
Yeah.
We need good people out there. We really do. And my son, my oldest son, I think I mentioned before the show, he was an OSI agent for a number of years, Office of Special Investigations with the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And ended up going back to school and being a doctor. My youngest son has been with the police department here in Anchorage on a specialized unit now. He's a SWAT officer. He's enjoying it and loves the work, and has the community. We're very fortunate here in Anchorage. The community really stands behind their officers for the most part. But we still talk about that all the time. And I don't know whether he's going to stay a police officer forever. And frankly, it doesn't matter to me one way or another. That's his life. But I would hate for him to get out of it, if he loved it, get out of it because the zeitgeist said it was a crummy job.
Right. That's good advice. And I think you're right. It's very difficult to say, and I think very presumptuous to say that the way things are now is somehow unprecedented, you know, in the late 60s, in the 70s. I mean, there were some rough times that you could definitely historically argue rival what's going on right now.
Kent State, there's a lot of stuff going on. We just look back at history, but I just think, I mean, and I have this discussion a lot on forums with the few times that I get on forums when I have time, when I'm not writing,
forums
with retired deputy marshals and whatnot. And some of them feel the same way, that boy, they'd never want their kid to go into law enforcement, and they talk anybody they can out of it. I feel the opposite. I feel like we need good people out there. Not that everyone should go into law enforcement. Certainly not. Just like not everybody should be a teacher or a brain surgeon or whatever, but we need good folks out there, not necessarily badass, you know, take names and
the tough guy,
you know, tough guy.
Yeah.
They need to certainly be tough, but we need people that are interested in service and people, and have that mental toughness and mental edge, and not necessarily people that are, you know, we always talk, I really like Mike Rowe's safety third philosophy, that safety shouldn't be the number one priority. If it is, you know, go set in a bunker. Any police officer that's been on the street for more than a minute knows that you risk being hurt just walking from the your door up to the door of a violator car. You have to put yourself in some kind of danger. Mm-hmm. And so people have to, you know, we hear kind of thrown around now, run towards the sound of gunfire kind of a thing. But you have to, I tell everybody that ask me about being a police officer, do a little simple mental test. If you're at a mall and you hear gunfire, is your first inclination to duck and wait it out, which is probably the smartest thing to do, right?
Yeah.
Or is your first inclination to go see what you can do to help, which is not the right thing to do as a civilian, but I'm talking about inclination.
Right.
And if your inclination is to risk your own personal safety and go see what you can do to help, then maybe you should explore a law enforcement job.
Right. And I think some people, because they have, they want to believe something about themselves, might say, I would run to that gunfire. Right. But as you go through life, at least in my experience, as I've gotten older, I've had opportunities to see how I would respond when something goes wrong. Or I've seen it in other people where something surprises them and their first reaction is often not what they would have wanted it to be. So, there may be some disconnect there, but it's a good mental exercise nonetheless to at least ponder, right? Like would I really go looking for that fight? Or would I just go straight to self-preservation? So you've had a really extensive, career in law enforcement and really interesting path. And, you know, as you mentioned, your one son was in law enforcement and transitioned out, just as you did, but after an entire career, obviously. So, and now you're in writing. So let's talk about that real quick. And I'm just interested in this topic, generally speaking.
Sure.
I'm not like you in the sense that I've always wanted to be a writer. Certainly not, but it's an interesting field to me. And I'm interested what your process looks like from the idea or, you know, the initial, you know, you have an idea for a book to getting it published. How do you go about that?
Wow. So they're all different. I write for the Tom Clancy Estate. The books are published by Putnam and Berkeley. My editor is with Berkeley. His great guy named Tom Colgan, he edited Clancy's books before Clancy passed away. And so there's that continuity there where he can talk to me. And so we chat about a plot and work on a plot. The state approves it. And then I spend a half a year working on that plot. On mine, which are more law enforcement based instead of, you know, geopolitical thriller or politics kind of based. Mm. I generally go from some thread or kernel of something that I've experienced or particularly a location. My first books, the series that got me the Clancy job that allowed me to retire when I turned 50, that is a series about an OSI agent that rides a BMW motorcycle and martial artist and sort of cool people I know, including both sons and my daughter, you know, speak several languages and that sort of thing. And those are, the character's name is Jericho Quinn. And my son was going in, oldest son's an Air Force Academy graduate and an OSI agent. And now a physician for the Air Force. But I sort of modeled the things I was learning from him and wrote, you know, obviously fantastical over the top adventures. Mm-hmm. The Arliss Cutter books are about a supervisory deputy marshal based in Alaska, where I live with my wife. And my son is an Anchorage police officer. We raised our kids here early on when we've been here about 23 years now. And, I guess we'd been here about a year, year and a half. And I was on the tactical tracking unit, sort of like a tactical unit, but rural. And we did a lot of man tracking and, you know, helping search and rescue, but also boots on the ground, man tracking for felons and escapees and wounded grizzly bears and, you know, what have you. It kind of a small law enforcement community up here. So we assisted, however, But at one point, like I say, probably about a year and a half in, I was called down as the tracker, but also as the Alaska Fugitive Task Force lead deputy down to Southeast Alaska to a little island called Prince of Wales Island. And it's the third largest island in the United States. There's, you know, Rhode Island and Kodiak and then Prince of Wales. And so about 800 miles of roads and caves and old growth forests. It's down by Ketchikan, just beautiful, about 800 miles from Anchorage where we live. And we spent about 3 days trying to find a guy who had chopped another guy's head off with a splitting maul and then fled into the woods. And right on the third day, we located him, brought him in. But the whole time I was there with the, you know, there's totem poles and that misty old growth forest and shipping, you know, fishing and beautiful pristine waters and away from, there's no roads that get there. You got to take a plane or a boat. And I remember thinking 20 something years ago, I'm gonna write a book about this place. This is a good place for a thriller. And then eventually the first Arliss Cutter book, Open Carry, was that story. Nice. And so I just carried on from there. So particularly now I draw on the Arlisses anyway, and on the next Clancy, the one that Chain of Command that comes out in November, it's more like Rainbow Six, as far as instead of a lot of geopolitics around the world, there's a lot of small team tactics and, you know, I've been able to not necessarily embed, if you will, but go observe my son's SWAT team, Abilene, Texas SWAT team and other folks that I know, and FBI, HRT and other, you know, tactical units and 10th Special Forces and in Colorado, and chat with those guys. And so I've been able to draw from that for the Clancy's. And so the research is a blast for any of these books.
Right. And that's something I've always been interested in. You know, kind of you just assume that the author, in this case, Clancy, as I was reading his older books, had to have been spent a significant amount of time with these different groups, right? Because he writes with an understanding of military doctrine and tactics and strategy and all this stuff that you don't just get to make up, right? It wouldn't be authentic. So, that's great to kind of hear you describe some of that. Cause it, I mean, it sounds like a blast.
Yeah, it is. It's great fun. Great fun. And I always tell, you know, Clancy opens doors. It's relied on my knowledge when I was writing my earlier books, and I still do with the Arliss Cutters, but I chatted with a contact in the military at the Pentagon a few months ago and said, hey, I need to talk to somebody from NORAD about some things for this Clancy. And a week later, I was on the phone with a bunch of people from NORAD and NORTHCOM, and they were walking me through some things and the stuff that it's amazing the assistance that I've been given. I've flown on V-22 Ospreys and of course, you know, Blackhawks for work and that sort of thing. So I draw from that, but much of it is just keeping track. And I had I tell the story all the time. It's getting early on. I was like 27 years old, didn't know anything about homicides. I was a detective, but I'd never worked a murder case. And a young woman was brutally murdered and dumped on the side of the road. And I had the missing person. So I was lead detective until my superior officers got back into town. It was a weekend. And this was back in the day when a pager was about the size of a Kleenex box, you know, on the side of your belt. They were humongous. And so I got paged out of church, went to this scene. And I did everything I knew what to do. I mean, I took measurements and probably, I don't know, 15 rolls of film and bagged evidence. And this was pre what we know about, you know, DNA and matching and all that, but it's still bagged stuff. And Texas Ranger showed up. They'd been my mentor on a couple of other things. What some people don't realize Texas Rangers do. They show up and they assist smaller departments with complex investigations. And so this ranger showed up and he kind of hunkered down next to the body and the wind was blowing away from it. because it was pretty bad, and a lot of decomposition and stuff. It was pretty bad. And so I asked the ranger. I said, his name is Billy Peterson. I said, Billy, tell me what I need to do. Nobody wanted this case. The county was out there, the state, and it was in the county, but she had been abducted from the city, and people were, kind of fighting over who didn't have to work it. And I said, Billy, tell me what I need to do. I need to do justice for this girl's family. And he had this toothpick in his mouth and hat, Texas Ranger. And I just looked on him in awe. I'm this 26, 27 year old kid who believed he was Mount Olympus, on to deal with immortals. And he said, Marcus, just write down everything you see. And he had the toothpick and took it out of his mouth. He said, write down everything you see. And right when he said that, one of those sticky greenback flies flew right off the body and into his mouth. And most people would have, hurled right there, but it went like this. Ranger Billy Peterson said, Marcus, just write down everything you see and watch out for the blowflies. And I went home and wrote that down. And I used it in my life.
Right.
I'm aware of what's going on around me. And you can't see it behind me, but there's probably, 25 or 30 little black notebooks that I've kept over the years. Mm. Blowfly incidents, whatever, through my law enforcement career. And I refer to them all the time. And, I don't know whether my kids will burn them or throw them away. I like to think that maybe out of all the junk I have in my office, my grandkids will enjoy looking at some of my, how to tell the time from looking at the Big Dipper at night and whatnot that I've taken over the years that I've learned from Alaska Natives and sailors and other law enforcement. So
yeah,
just be aware.
That's awesome. So Bone Rattle that's your most recent book. Is that correct?
That's the one that's the most recent Arliss that came out a few months ago.
Okay. So what's this one about?
So Bone Rattle is it's the third book in the Arliss Cutter series. Arliss is the supervisory deputy marshal that's moved to Alaska from Florida to take care of his widowed sister-in-law after his brother is killed in an accident up on the North Slope. The thing about that is that Arliss has always had a flame for his sister-in-law. He liked her first. He wanted to marry her first, but she married his brother. So he's here. It's kind of tense in his heart because he loves her, but she didn't love him. But he's helping her, taking care of her two boys and their daughter. He's sort of become a surrogate father, but it's killing him inside because of that. In the meantime, he's got some things that have happened in his past as far as a personality where he will not let bad behavior go unchecked. In other words, he's got a bit of he wouldn't call it an anger management problem, but if somebody's a bully, he smacks them down pretty quick mm-hmm. and pretty hard, kind of always putting him a little bit of jeopardy of his job. And he's got a partner named Lola Te'ariki, who's a Pacific Islander who kind of acts as his Jiminy Cricket and his partner and keeps him in check. She's a really strong character in her own right. My wife and I spend a few months every winter in the South Pacific, and we have a lot of friends there. And so I've modeled that character after her. Bone Rattle takes place in Juneau, which is our capital in Alaska, about 600 miles south of here. Reachable. They have a joke in Juneau that there's only three ways to get there: by plane, boat, or birth canal. You can't drive there. So it's cut off from the rest of the state. And because of that, there's a lot of, conspiracy theories about our legislature and, that sort of thing that sort of gets bandied around. And so I just play on that and have Arliss and Lola down there dealing with some corrupt politicians and a major drug trial and, and kidnapping and kind of the typical, I wouldn't say typical, but what you might think of as a regular murder mystery, but set against the background of Alaska and the miles and miles and miles of mining and, abandoned gold mines. And Alaska is a huge character in these books. as are the Alaska Native populations, and then of course the Marshal Service. And I try to put in the real work that the Marshal Service does on a daily basis, and then of course have Arliss and Lola always stumble onto some sort of grisly murder.
Of course. So kind of jumping back to the Clancy books.
Sure.
I missed this in our conversation earlier. I missed this question, but what is it? What's the challenge like? Because it must be difficult to write a Clancy book, because he's such a staple in that world. Mm-hmm. What's that been like, having to write?
It was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. I tried to get out of it. I mean, it's not something you seek out. I was down in Florida with my wife researching the first Arliss Cutter book, and back in 2016, and we were on the beach kind of taking a break, and my agent called and said, Mark Graney, who's doing them before I was, is stepping back to focus on his stuff more. He's done 7 and he's recommended you. And so he was doing a cover quote for me for my latest, at that point, Jericho Quinn book called Field of Fire. And he was very complimentary of it. But he didn't tell me what he was doing. He just sent it on to the Clancy publisher, and they called and offered me the job. And of course, like I say, it was absolutely terrifying. And I told Tom Colgan, the editor at that time, that if he had not, if he had offered it to somebody and they weren't terrified, it was probably the wrong person to offer it to, because as you said, Tom Clancy was an icon. Mm-hmm. And so we made a conscious decision, and Tom Colgan kind of talked me off the ledge, that I would write the best Mark Cameron geopolitical thriller I could in the spirit of Tom Clancy. I wouldn't try to copy Tom Clancy's voice. I wouldn't try to be Tom Clancy, because that would come out as counterfeit. Frankly, the newer readers that go back and read Tom Clancy aren't affected the same way we are, because it's a different world. Tom Clancy spent a page describing a K-bar knife in Without Remorse. Now we'll know what that is. We don't have to, we have Wikipedia. We have a lot of stuff. Tom Clancy included Wikipedia articles, if you will, in his books.
Yeah.
And so before Wikipedia existed, he really got down in the weeds. And we loved that. We absolutely loved that as readers. Mm. I believe that Tom Clancy would have written a different book now, because of what readers would have wanted. It had been great, because Clancy was a gifted writer. But so you can't follow exactly what some brilliant guy did, 40 years ago.
Right.
So I try to write a good story, and there's plenty of haters out there. I don't ever read my reviews, because there's people that are just mad at me because I'm not Tom Clancy. And then a whole nother stable of readers, they're mad at me because I'm not Mark Graney, and who they came to really enjoy.
Right.
So good on them. It's art. And so I write the best book I can. By the time this book comes up, Chain of Command, it comes out in November. By the time that comes out, I will be getting ready for the next Arliss that's already written and in editorial right now. That'll come out in March. I'll be finishing the 5th Arliss. So I'm way down the road by the time one book comes out and we're doing publicity for it. So I can't, I like talking about it, and I'll chat, have talks like this, but I'm not going to go back and wait with bait like breath, as it were, to see what the reviewers are going to say.
Right.
That's just not my game.
Right. I think that's a lesson that anyone who creates content has to learn. I know I learned it early on in this show. It's like, especially YouTube. Obviously, I'm not writing or producing podcasts and YouTube videos, but I learned really quick that it was not beneficial to read the comments on YouTube.
Oh no. Absolutely.
It just, because you start second guessing yourself, you know, and to some extent that's good. You should be introspective, but at the same time, these people don't know you. They don't know as much about the topic as you do, generally speaking. And usually they're just haters. You know, why are you going to waste your time?
Oh yeah, exactly. Well, I'll get an email periodically from somebody, and I do generally answer emails, not hateful, you know, mad at me because I wrote an African-American character or a strong female character or whatever. I don't answer those. Those are idiots. But I will answer most emails, even the ones that send me a note from 5 books ago that say, you know, you spelled this word wrong on page 71. Thanks. Okay. I don't know what got into somebody that they felt like they had to jump on their computer and hold my nose to the carpet like I was a puppy that peed there because I made a human error.
You missed one out of thousands of words.
I guess it makes them feel good. And, you know, I generally just respond with, sorry to wreck your read, and then delete the email and move on. I did get an email from somebody that he was a physics, nuclear physicist in Idaho that took me to task because I had gotten the half-life of a plutonium isotope wrong by about 10,000 years. And I wrote him back and just said, dude, I'm just so happy a nuclear physicist is reading my Jericho Quinn books. Thanks. I must have transposed the number or whatever, but, you know, thanks for writing.
Yeah.
And I enjoy those kind of emails because, I mean, we're human. And when you write, you know, upwards of 500,000 words a year with all, some stuff slips through. That's the way it is.
Yeah. That
we try though. Try really hard.
Right. Yep. With that quantity. Now see, I can't even talk, so I'm not going to criticize anybody writing a book a lot long. With that quantity of words out there, I mean, we're humans. Even with all the editing that goes into it, it's like something's gonna make
sure.
It
absolutely.
I'm sure I've put out some stuff in shows that I don't even know is there that I meant to edit out.
Oh, yeah.
It, you know, it's like that's why I don't go back and listen to them.
That's right.
So I want to kind of round this conversation out by coming back to a topic that I've had a lot of questions on. I know it's a topic of interest for our more veteran listeners, because we do have a lot of cops that listen to the show, and that is your transition from law enforcement to something else. We touched on it before, but you've definitely got some wisdom and experience here, as well as, you know, you've left a legacy that has led to that with your son as well. What allowed you, do you think, to succeed in that transition? You wanted to be a writer for a long time, but what did you do that allowed you to succeed? Because a lot of people would do that, leave law enforcement and then find themselves back in it, you know, a year later.
Well, I don't know whether I succeeded or not at the time, but I was relatively successful before I retired. So okay. I had a college professor years and years and years ago that kind of saw my faults, I think, and pulled me aside and said, really kindly, he's a theater professor. I was met my wife in the theater. We majored in theater. That was my love. But he pulled me aside and he said, Mark, you will never amount to your full potential unless you learn to use those 15-minute segments of your life that everybody else wastes. And I really, you know, it's another thing I wrote down. I mean, I was carrying a little book back then. I really took that to heart, and it's helped me, especially now with social media and, you know, smartphones, and we can just plug in and let our brain, something else hijack our brains and take it over and waste time. So I remember sitting in an airport, we were deadheading back from moving a prisoner to, I don't remember where, I think Barrow or someplace. Excuse me, the deputy that was with me he's a friend of mine, but he kind of sour grapes like joked. And at that point, I probably had like 4 Westerns out and one thriller in the works and a contract for, like, I really couldn't contract at the time. I had to write everything by spec because of government rules. And so he was kind of joking with me. He said, it must be nice to be getting these royalty checks and, you know, having this second career while you're working. How do you do it? And I looked over at him and he had his phone in his hand. And I said, because I'm sitting here writing and you're playing Angry Birds.
Yeah.
So if you want to do something like this, do something like this. And, you know, we chuckled and we remain good friends to this day. But I think whoever makes the transition just has to make that decision and be smart about it. And I didn't leave law enforcement in the middle. I thought about it many times when I'd have a little burnout time or whatever. Think, well, I could, you know, when I first got published, I still had 8 years to go before I was 50, almost 10 years. When I could, you know, take my early retirement, I could have said, well, I've got a New York contract. I can quit right now and gamble and not have health insurance and, you know, whatnot. But luckily I have a smart wife that told me not to do that. And I just waited for a week and then I love my job again. And even now, people say, man, that must be great. You got the best job in the world sitting around in the South Pacific writing novels. And I say, you know what? This is the second best job in the world. Service when I was out there. Now, would I go back? Obviously, I wouldn't. I made the decision to quit or retire at 50 to do this full time. And plus, I'm almost 60 years old now. So yeah. My bones hurt too bad. I go work out with my son and go shooting or whatnot. And I think, man, this is really a young person's game. But as far as fleeing from the job, and I, you know, you may have heard this from other people, but I remember sitting in a car with some agents from other agencies during the United Nations General Assembly. So ATF agents, Secret Service used to bring in Treasury agents. State Department would bring in us in the Marshal Service because we had protective training and we qualified with the Uzi, and that's what they were using at the time. Not very many people were shooting Uzis. Everybody had moved to MP5s back then. And so there was a car with AT, it was UN General Assembly. So there was dignitaries from all over the world. I was sitting in a car with an ATF agent, a diplomatic security agent, a US Customs agent, deputy marshal. And then one of the DS agents had moved over to an intelligence agency. Mm-hmm. And we were chatting back and forth. And as it turned out, that year, a handful of ATF agents had transferred over to customs. A handful of customs agents had transferred over to diplomatic security. A handful of marshals had gone over to ATF. There was this wave of people saying, well, that job's got to be better than my job, mm-hmm. and moving over. And some of them were very, one of my good friends left the Marshal Service and went to ATF and became very successful. Another friend went to DEA and became very successful. So yeah, if it's the right move, it's the right move. But a move for the sake of leaving something is probably not the right move. A move to go somewhere is the right move. And so as a writer, I wasn't leaving the Marshal Service. I was going to be a writer. And I think that's what helped me succeed.
All right.
If you can call it that.
Oh, I think you've succeeded. That's
well, I'm having a good time.
Yeah. No, and going back to your conversation with the friend about how do you do all this? You know, I look at guys like Tony Malik. He's been on the show. He's right now, well, he's Secret Service, but he has a startup and also a very successful, essentially fitness apparel company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I look at him and I'm like, how are you doing this? You know, you've got so much going on. And, but at the same time, you know, I'm doing different things, but I'm the same way. And there was one moment in my life, I read this book called Destiny, that it wasn't that great of a book, but the main point of the book was that exactly that point, those 15 minutes, are the difference, will make a massive difference 15 years from now, because they add up, you know. And you know, I work with a lot of young guys at work, and doing what I do with the infantry, and it's like most of those guys, you know, and we're all different, right? Some people are okay with just kind of plodding mm-hmm. through life, and I'm not gonna discourage someone or criticize them for just being them. But at the same time, if you can't sit there and complain about someone else's success if you're the one sitting there playing Angry Birds, right?
Right.
So
exactly. Exactly.
That's a really good point. And to everyone listening, take some notes on that last bit of our conversation, because a lot of good advice in there.
Thanks.
Mark, I don't want to take up any more of your time. You've probably got plenty of other things that you could be working on right now, spending those 15 minutes getting something done. But
this is great.
I can't say what an honor it is to have you on the show. And again, just want to say thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. Appreciate it.
No, thank you.
Alrighty then. That's it for this one, ladies and gents. Thank you again for tuning in. I hope you all enjoyed the interview with Mr. Cameron. Go check out one of his books, please. The Arliss Cutter books, his current series that he's working on right now. His most recent book is called Bone Rattle. But of course, he also writes on the Clancy series as well. So go check him out. Mark Cameron, you can find him anywhere books are sold, I'm sure. Yeah, and then don't forget, you can go check out or subscribe to the Police Academy podcast over at patreon.com, patreon.com. I won't go through the entire list of benefits again, because our intro was longer than I like them to be. Just go check it out, and you can see for yourself how you can make your life so much better by being a member of the Police Academy podcast membership. Oh, the one thing I didn't mention in the intro, though, is that we do have merch for sale now, finally, on the Police Academy podcast website. So it's just the name of the show.com/GSF for Good Strong Free. So policeacademypodcast.com/GSF. Go check out the merch we have there. As I am recording this, shirts are on pre-order, but they will be available very soon, and are shipping very soon. So go check it out. And if you are a top tier member and you need a new Tumblr, you can also get that. But that information and how to do that is private. If you don't know, I already sent a message out to all of our top tier members. But if you didn't get that, please reach out to me on Discord, on Patreon, or through email, and I will give you the instructions on how to do that. Okay, that's it. Thank you again for joining. We will see you all on the next one. As always, do good, be strong, stay free.